Welcome to episode 17 of the Cosmetic Course podcast. My name's Adrian Richards, and today I'm going to be talking to Ron Myers of the Consulting Rooms about the thorny issue of VAT. So, hi, Ron. Thanks for joining us today.
That's fine. Hi, Adrian.
I just thought, you know, perhaps today we could talk about the issue of VAT, and I know this is a real hot potato in the in the industry at the moment. Could you just give me an update on what your understanding of the issue is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I'll do is just to give a disclaimer, really saying that really anything that I say doesn't constitute any form of tax advice, because I'm not an accountant or a specialist in VAT issues. But I'm certainly happy to discuss, I think, some of the issues that we're aware of from a consulting room perspective relating to this issue, and also as someone who also owns and runs a clinic as well, who, you know, it concerns directly. So one of the things that we did recently was to do a survey of our members through the consulting room, and we asked two questions. For those people who were registered with the Care Quality Commission, were VAT registered? And it was around 28% who were VAT registered. And for those people who weren't registered or aren't registered by the Care Quality Commission, how many are VAT registered? And it's only 20%, which is quite interesting, because we thought there would be fewer people who would be VAT registered, who were registered with the Care Quality Commission, than those who weren't. And that really relates to, I think, the advice that was given by the Independent Healthcare Advisory Services back in 2007. These are people that I'm sure you're aware of who've been involved in the recent Treatments You Can Trust scheme that was launched this year.
Yeah.
And this was, I think, you know, raised a few years ago, I think, and they sought to get some form of clarification regarding the issue of VAT. And there were seemed to be two points that you needed to basically kind of tick the boxes on in order to be VAT exempt for the treatments you provided. The first one was that the procedure must be performed in a hospital or state regulated institution, i.e. back then Healthcare Commission registered, but now Care Quality Commission registered. And then the second thing, that the procedure must constitute care or medical or surgical treatment. And they thought that most cosmetic procedures carried out in hospitals will fall within this definition and therefore be exempt regardless of purpose. And they also went on to clarify and said that they were aware that businesses operating certain lasers and IPL machines, together with some offering other cosmetic treatments, that have sought to exempt their supplies based upon the definition of state regulated institution. And it said that these businesses fulfill the first condition, but in many cases the practitioners are not registered health professionals and there is no medical input to the procedure. So they concluded that they only consider these procedures are care or medical surgical treatment and exempt in the following circumstances, and that's where the procedure is carried out by or under the direct supervision of a registered health professional, or the procedure is carried out by a non-health professional performs part of a treatment program drawn up by a registered health professional following the diagnosis of a medical condition. So those are the two riders there with regards to laser treatments. Now, of course, since then, anyway, back in 1st of October, all laser treatments for hair removal and pretty much skin rejuvenation as well have been, you're not now required to be registered by the Care Quality Commission. So I think there will be more clinics out there that won't be able to tick the first box in terms of being a regulated institution. I'm sure that that's something as well where I think a lot of people are still seeking to be registered who were previously registered by saying that they are treating disease, disorder or injury. So, for instance, things like polycystic ovary syndrome, hirsutism that's associated with that. But there are, I believe and understand, a number of people that are having problems getting registration again with CQC providers. I don't know whether that's something you've heard as well, Adrian.
Yeah, I have heard a little bit about that, Ron. Now, could I just take you back a little bit, just to the VAT issue?
Sure.
Just for people who may not be totally au fait with this, what is the VAT rate at the moment?
Well, the VAT rate at the moment is 17.5%, and that is going to increase to 20% next year. So it's a considerable component of a cosmetic treatment if you're going to have to add it on.
Okay.
You know, if you're charging, say, £200 for one area of Botox, for instance, then adding another £35 on is not a not an insignificant amount, and you're doing that and actually giving that to the VAT man, of course, as well. That's going to your pocket.
Yeah. So health.
What it does mean is that you can claim back the input tax on your business. So anything that you buy that has VAT on it, you're allowed to claim that back and offset that against the VAT that you collect on the service that you provide.
Okay. What's the VAT threshold at the moment, Rob?
I think it's around 75,000. I'm not sure whether that's increasing or decreasing next year. Yeah. It's around about that level.
Is that turnover or profit?
That's turnover.
Okay. So essentially, if you have, if your business turns over above that amount, you are liable for that. Now, the issue really is, isn't it, that health has, along with babies' clothes, children's clothes and food, has traditionally been non-vatable.
That's correct.
And the argument really is that the government is sort of saying, well, are these treatments, medicinal or are they cosmetic? And if they're cosmetic, you should pay VAT on them.
That seems to be the argument, although it was argued otherwise, actually, in a recent case that came up as a VAT case, actually, that was Ultralase. Ultralase, which is a company that I think most people are familiar with regards to laser eye surgery, set up a separate limited company, a separate division back in 2008, called Ultralase Medical Aesthetics Limited, and they were operating clinics nationwide offering laser treatments, peels, injectables. I think this was backed up by 3i, who are a large private equity company who put a lot of money into this, but for whatever reason, it didn't actually work out and the company closed down. They were, funnily enough, VAT registered, and as a result of that, because of the amount of money they'd spent on setting the business up, including capital equipment and buying lasers, they actually had £400,000 that they were going to claim back from the Inland Revenue because their input tax had exceeded their output tax by that amount. And this went as a case to the Inland Revenue, who said, no, actually, these treatments shouldn't have been vatable, so you shouldn't have been VAT registered, hence you can't claim that input tax back. And so this actually went to a tribunal, and it was quite interesting because the lawyers on behalf of Ultralase Medical Aesthetics were claiming that their advertising was focused on beauty, designed to improve appearance and self-confidence, and that they weren't advertising medical treatments to cure or treat disease or disorder. And they actually stated as well that people do not need to be referred to clinics by a doctor, and the clinics turn away anyone they think needs to see their own doctor for medical concerns such as clinical depression. So what they were trying to do was to really kind of clarify this and say there is a difference between the people that we treat, which is probably really purely more for vanity, and those that are seeking cosmetic treatments from a medical perspective. But the HMRC's argument was that as the clinics were state regulated, any procedure carried out in them was exempt because they were regulated back then with the Healthcare Commission.
Right.
And you know, the idea behind all of this and the exemption of VAT on medical treatments is so that any additional VAT cost doesn't prevent people from seeking medical treatment in the event that it's not available free of charge in the NHS.
Right.
That
was why we set up, was it?
Absolutely. That's the real reason why. So what they did want to do was to collect VAT on treatments that were medical where there was a need and where that might stop someone seeking treatment because of the additional cost.
Okay. So just getting back, Rob, so historically, clinics which did a lot of laser work, laser was regulated, they needed to be regulated. Laser hair removal is not medically necessary. So they tended to be, or you thought they would be, more likely to be registered with that?
Well, again, from our research, it depends on how the business is set up. I think if you look at most beauty salons who've been involved in IPL or laser hair removal over the last 10 years, I would say probably more of those will be VAT registered than a doctor or possibly even a nurse who set up a medical aesthetic clinic, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Who's also brought in a laser machine and is performing laser hair removal. It's likely that they could have as a component of that some people who have polycystic ovary syndrome, for instance, where there is potentially a medical reason to try and control hair growth. But, you know, when you look at it, the vast majority would be, I guess, underarms, legs, bikini lines, so more, I would guess, cosmetic.
Yeah. So I suppose the big decision, Ron, you know, for people, so there's two groups of people. There's people maybe starting in the industry who are under the threshold, so they don't need to worry about it till they get bigger, at which time they will need to worry about it. And there's other people who either have existing practice or, you know, quickly going to get up to those numbers. Now, I know people who haven't been VAT registered, who've got, you know, very quite high profile people in the aesthetics industry who are very, very concerned because they've had the VAT man around to them and are looking for backdated VAT for the last couple of years. And these figures they're looking for can be, you know, in six figures. So number one, what would your advice be if you are one of these people who are, you know, have been in practice on time, the VAT man's asking you these questions and asking for this money, what would your advice be?
Get a good lawyer who understands VAT law. I mean, you know, this is an issue that is, you know, potentially can have a very big effect on our industry, and there are large companies out there who are not VAT registered with turnovers of, you know, 20, 30 million pounds. So you can imagine the impact that can have. Now, these sorts of people can, employ people who will give them the best sort of advice and best accent, if you like, on the grey areas. And undoubtedly, you know, these are grey areas because, you know, if you looked at what the HMRC were doing with Ultralase, they were basically saying, well, these treatments shouldn't be VAT registered, because what they were trying to do was to defend a position there where they were trying to save themselves £400,000.
Yeah.
But in fact, they actually lost that case.
Yes.
Which is interesting. So, if you look at that and the summary of that case, it says basically, I mean, the tax advisors from the KPMG commented that this decision gives us some useful points about where the dividing line between exempt healthcare and taxable cosmetic procedures should be drawn. And it said it would seem the way clinics track and screen patients to procedures on offer, how these are described and the benefits they offer and the referral process could all have a bearing on the VAT liability.
Yeah.
So it's possible, therefore, that the same procedure carried out in the same state-regulated location by the same doctor on two different people could have a different VAT liability.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's very grey, and I think it's down to individuals to look. And I think what a lot of people are doing is looking at whatever they can do to try and medicalise these, you know, what they're doing in their particular practice. Now, I think the absolute minimum by the looks of this has to be, and certainly does appear to have applied for a long time, that they are state-regulated.
Yeah.
So in other words, that they're operating under in a premises that's CQC now registered.
Yeah.
I think if you're not, I think you do have a potential problem there. The other thing then comes down to this whole definition about, you know, what is and is not a cosmetic or medical treatment.
Can I just take you a little bit back, Ron? So if you're in somewhere that's regulated could you just explain that point again?
Yes, I mean, if you look back at what the IHAS, their summary regarding this position back in 2007, they said there's two points that need to be kind of two boxes that need to be ticked. The procedure must be performed in a state-regulated institution, and that procedure must constitute care or medical or surgical treatment, however you want to define that. Now, the problem is with the HMRC is that their case was that basically that all clinics who were state regulated, that any procedure carried out was exempt. And they lost the argument because Ultralase managed to say that basically the exemption of that on the medical treatments is there. In order for exemption to apply, the service had first to be one of medical care, and aesthetic cosmetic treatments did not comprise medical care. So they were arguing, saying that their treatments, the treatments they offered, were not medical.
Yeah.
And they argued that successfully against the Inland Revenue.
But so, just going back there, Ron, so if you're somewhere that's registered, you are more likely not to be need to be VAT registered. If you're somewhere that is not regulated, it's more difficult, and you.
I would say so. I would say that would be the case. Yeah. But as I said, I'm not a tax advisor, and when we look at this as well, you know, clearly there are people out there, and from our survey as well, who are offering these types of treatments, who are not Care Quality Commission registered, and we've only got 20% of them that say they are VAT registered.
Yeah. So I suppose
More people are VAT registered who are in CQC registration. So. It's kind of odd. So, you know, clearly there's a lot of confusion out there.
Yeah.
Accountants give conflicting advice. HMRC have not given any clear, really clear definition as to, the this issue between what is and is not a medical treatment.
Yeah, so it's a really difficult one. So on balance, Ron, only about 20% of people are registered.
Yeah.
So most people aren't.
Some people aren't.
Some people are getting investigated for VAT. It's very random. So, Ron, are any of the big companies which have a lot to lose potentially from being investigated for VAT and having to pay back retrospectively VAT, are any of them being investigated to your knowledge?
As far as I'm aware, no. But clearly they are, concerned about this. And some of these businesses, of course, have been operating for 30-plus years.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is something that, obviously, none of these businesses want to jump and register for VAT.
No.
Unless they have to, because I think once you've gone through that process, it's very hard then, whatever comes out, if there is any clarity in this area, to actually deregister yourself for VAT.
Yeah. So once you're registered, you can't unregister.
You can, but I think it's much more, you've actually got to make a case for that. And, you know, I recently did that with a company, so in a couple of different companies, and this was a company that, did need to be VAT registered because of the services that were provided, but for whatever reason, I wanted to come under a threshold so that it didn't need to be VAT registered. And that was quite difficult to do. Once you are VAT registered, then you need to negotiate with the Inland Revenue in order to deregister for VAT. So it's not an easy thing.
So what
I think ultimately it's all going to hinge around this issue about what is cosmetic and what is medical. And I think there's some people as well looking at definitions of this and looking at, you know, maybe what's invasive, what's not invasive as well. So, for instance, some people call these, you know, non-invasive treatments. But if you look at EU law, anything to do with, you know, for instance, injectable treatments is actually classified as invasive, you know, which makes sense, really. You're sticking a needle into someone at the end of the day and putting in a substance. And certainly if it's a prescription substance, such as Botox and, you know, in essence as well, with fillers containing lignocaine, you're putting in a prescription medicine.
Yeah.
Clearly, one could look and say, well, if that's delivered by a medical person, then, you know, potentially there are implications associated with that. Some people are looking at the issue of the psychological element. One could make a case that there is no such thing as a purely cosmetic treatment, that there is some element of a psychological driver there for people to come in to a medical clinic and seek these types of treatments. And it's really looking at extension of what you call vanity right up to, I guess, body dysmorphic disorder, which is, I guess, the other extreme end of the spectrum where you've got probably a psychiatric condition there that drives people in to look at having treatments that could enhance the way they look.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a really tricky issue. I mean, so I suppose on balance, if you are out there, you know, and you're confused about, you know, which is the best way to go, what you probably need to do is talk to people in your professional organisation. So if you sort of BACD,
absolutely,
or you know, some of the nursing organisations, and really find out what your peers are doing, how they're approaching it.
I think this is going to need some form of concerted effort eventually on behalf of the industry to look at trying to make the case for not being VAT registered, which is what most people want.
Yeah, so I think there is an argument for, you know, everyone sort of coming together to, you know, get some clarification on this with some lawyers, isn't there, really?
Well, there is, and I think what's happening is that the Inland Revenue are looking at probably the smaller companies.
Yeah.
And trying to sort of, you know, pick people off who probably don't have the resources there, of course,
yeah,
in order to really battle against the Inland Revenue. And I guess the more that they do that, the more potentially they've the strength they've got to say, well, you know, there's these number of cases here where, you know, these people, they feel that it was potentially, you know, vatable treatment.
Yeah, so really a better thing to do would be to get everyone together from the beginning and, you know, sort of club together. Whether that will happen or not, I don't know.
Although there are a lot of companies out there that are kind of, you know, saying, well, what we don't want to do necessarily is to raise this as an issue.
Oh, right, yeah.
And get, I mean, it's, you know, some people say, well, it would be nice to have clarification. But there's a lot of people out there as well, and certainly the bigger companies that say, well, you know, clarification, if it comes down the wrong side,
yeah,
you know, could be expensive for everyone. And in some cases, potentially could make some business models very difficult to operate from a margin perspective.
I think it would have revolutionary changes because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when it goes up to 20% next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And people's profit margins are often not 20%. So it does make a big difference, doesn't it? It could wipe that out. Well, Ron, well, thank you very much for joining us today. If anyone is interested in, you know, clarifying this, they could contact you directly, Ron, at the Consulting Rooms. Could you just give us the best way of doing that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they can go to consultingroom.com and all our contact details are on there. As I say, I'm not really a tax advisor. It's something that obviously our members are concerned about, and it's something that we, with our contacts and sort of understanding, will try and look at taking the story forward as it does go forward.
And you could point people.
Inform people.
You could point people in the right direction, couldn't you, Ron?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think really, at the end of the day, this is an independent choice for your business, and the easy thing to do is to basically be VAT registered. There's not going to be a potential issue then. The risk is basically if you are operating the wrong side of any precedence that really does drive forward is the claim back over 2, 3, 4, or 5 years.
Yeah,
that could be the issue.
And that's quite
depending on your business model and you know, how you operate. And I think it is going to vary depending on the different business models out there and how they're led and whether they're medically led or not, and whether they're potentially Care Quality Commission registered or not, and the mix as well of the treatments that they're offering.
Brilliant.
And the volume of sales that they're getting in through those, you know, different treatments. I mean, clearly, some clinics just focus on laser hair removal.
Yeah.
And maybe just market bikini lines or underarms.
Yeah.
And that's very different from a medical aesthetic clinic that does a whole mixture of different things from, you know, cosmetic surgery procedures, liposuction, breast implants, breast reduction, through to injectable treatments and laser skin rejuvenation, hair removal as well.
Yeah. Well, Ron, thank you. I think we're drawing to a close now. Thank you very much for joining us. And, you know, hopefully, we'll be able to give you more clarification in future episodes.
Lovely. Thank you.
So a big thank you to Ron for sharing his views on VAT. It is a very difficult area. It's not at all black and white, and I think it will be certainly worthwhile following the podcasts and other information, including the consulting rooms, to get updates on the situation. And we'll try and update you on what's going on in future podcasts. So again, thanks very much for listening and downloading the podcast. We'd love it if you could leave comments on iTunes and a rating, which helps us rise up the rankings. I would also love it if you could phone our new answer machine line, which is 0870 490 7385. That's a UK number, so you might just need to add the UK code before that, which is 44. If you leave a message on the line, I'll be able to play it on future podcasts and answer any queries and questions you may have. So again, Thanks very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. We hope you'll be able to download and tune in next time.